Hello, everyone. Let's get started. We're going to do some coaching today. So you guys, if you've signed up, you can go ahead and raise your hand. Let me tell you who I'm looking for. I'm looking for Paula first. Paula McNabb, raise your hand if you're here. There you are. Okay. You're gonna have to mute something. There you go.
Can you? Is it okay now?
Okay now. Echo on you. Do you have something like another device you're using or something?
Yeah.
Okay. It picks it up like on a recording. And like it just picks up both, so it just echoes them back and forth because it doesn't know where to go.
Okay.
All right. Tell everybody what we're coaching on.
Well, I have health anxiety. And I have catastrophic thinking that goes along with it.
You have health anxiety? Is that what you said?
Yeah, well, formerly known as hypochondria, you know.
Formerly known as.
Yeah. It just sounds better now, I guess. And it just is debilitating for me. I've had it on and off my whole life. And I'm currently going through another cycle of it. And I can't. So I'm trying to manage my thoughts because I know it's all about my thoughts.
Yeah.
But it cripples me more or less.
Why is it debilitating? And why is it crippling you?
Well, I can go through my day and do what I have to get done, but I'm a ball of anxiety. My symptoms, whatever is affecting me at the moment, gets worse. And
why do you think they get worse?
Because of my thoughts.
Right. So let's just is this anxiety? Is this what we want to call it? What do we want it to be called?
Anxiety, but it's the worst type of anxiety I have is around my health.
So you have better anxiety?
Well, like if it's just anxiety about my job, I don't get that worked up about it.
So why do you not get so worked up about job anxiety?
Because I fear death. I fear the suffering and the long-term death. That's my greatest fear.
Is a suffering long-term death?
Yeah.
Okay. So you want to put anxiety up here?
Sure.
So why do you fear a suffering long-term death? So we're going to work this in two different ways. I want to figure out if we can just kind of come up with a more, I'm not saying I'm at peace and happy and you cured my problem, but when you start thinking I'm going to suffer a long-term death, where could we go from there? That doesn't cripple you. Because you have catastrophic thoughts about work too, right?
Sure.
I mean, I don't know. You have to tell me.
They're not as, I mean, no, I'm not going to die from any situation at work.
So what is it that's going to kill you during the day? Tell me where your brain goes. This is it. I'm going to die.
So my symptoms, whatever is happening in my body, I think it's going to be diagnosed as something terminal and awful and suffering, and that I can't handle it. I'm not going to be able to handle it well.
But you're not handling it well now. What do you think is going to get worse? You're going to be extra sad? And extra scared?
That all my worst nightmares are coming true.
I want to just show you something. Your worst nightmare, you're not wanting to go to the worst place, but it's already happening in your brain. Why not just let it? What is the worst that happens if you're just here I am. Like, tell me something that happens that triggers you to start thinking, I'm surely going to die.
Well, okay. So currently, for the past year, I've had these tremors and twitches in my body.
Okay.
And I didn't think much about it. You know, they're like,
keep going. Tremors and twitches.
Oh. Right. And it's been over a year, and they seem to have gotten worse recently. And
to see a doctor about them?
I have an appointment.
So you've had tremors and twitches for a year, right? I just want to get the
scene. And I was. Correct. Yes, yes.
Okay. For a year. Okay. And then when you get them, what happens?
They're annoying. I mean, I'm like, oh, I wonder, you know, why that's happening. And it isn't until I go on, which I try not to, Dr. Google, which I did a couple of weeks ago. I resisted. And what I saw was ALS, which freaks the hell out of me.
So we resist, we Google, we freak out.
Right.
Anything else we're doing? Avoid doctor.
I talk to people.
So you avoid the doctor. You
right.
Talk to people about it.
Right.
Okay. And when you have these tremors and twitches, for the last year, you've been thinking, this is seriously going to kill me.
Well, I didn't until about 2 weeks ago when they seemed to be getting worse. And then I'm like, I'm going to look this up and just see if there's something going on. And that's when you see the worst, right? The worst thing that could possibly be.
Tremors and twitches for a year. Google says ALS.
Right.
Now you're like, I'm dying.
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I'm dying and I can't handle it.
Right.
And that feels anxious. What does that really feel like, though? It's not just anxiety.
It's terrifying.
Terrified. So we've already Googled. I'll just take this one out. So you're resisting it. You're freaking out. You've now called the doctor at least.
Yes.
You've talked about it. So you're basically just not handling it right now.
Right.
Yeah. Do you see how this model is working beautifully for you? I mean, we're not handling it. If the best we can do is, I will give you, you called the doctor, but you didn't call the doctor because you wanted to just to see what it was. Like, that was a different model. If I'm dying and I can't handle it, does not get you to call the doctor. You called the doctor because you're like, shit, this could be serious. You should find out. Like, your rational brain goes to, I should find out. This is the irrational part. So every time you get a tremor or a twitch, it's going to trigger you to freak out. If you keep thinking,
yes,
I'm going to die and can't handle it. Do you really think you can't handle if you get diagnosed with ALS?
Well, I think I'll have to handle it. I mean, I don't have a choice.
That's what you're going to need to do. And I think a lot of you make the mistake of like, well, I probably don't have ALS. I mean, we can absolutely run a model that's like, nothing's confirmed. ALS is a long shot at best. You know, I'm getting older. Lots of people have twitches and tremors. Could be a lot of things. I mean, you can have that model, but I think sometimes what most of you need to do is you need to run the model of your worst fear. Because when you're left to your own devices, like swimming in anxiety, what you do is you just keep thinking, I'm going to die. This is going to like destroy my family. Like our brain catastrophizes. It's already doing that. Whether or not you write it down on a piece of paper, like it lives in there. So like, guys, when you think I don't have to model and I don't have to journal to face my fears, that is bullshit. You do need to, because you're either going to let it just trigger you into being panicked and scared all the time and feeling you have no authority over it, or you need to be like, what is the worst thing that can happen? I get diagnosed with ALS. Then what? Like, really, then what, Paula? What happens?
Then you usually die in 3 to 5 years, a very ugly death.
But what happens in the short run?
I try to get help, you know, I figure out what I can do to make life the best possible. I don't think there's any medications. I don't know.
Here's what happens. If you get a diagnosis like that, you start figuring it out. Your brain is telling you there's only one option, long time suffering. There's nothing else. And it's like, honestly, no, you start figuring out. It doesn't mean it'll be a great life, but it doesn't mean that you're just going to, like, you have to calm yourself down by saying, of course I would be scared as shit. If I got diagnosed with ALS, the first thing that probably happened is I cry. The second thing that probably happens is I call everybody I love. The third thing that's happened is we start figuring some shit out. Like, you allow your brain to, like you're just thinking of that part. But if you let your brain be like, I know this is what will happen, then there's a peace that comes over you. Right now, you're thinking it would just be all out of your control and stuff. You have to redirect your brain some. And I don't think, like, telling yourself, well, it'll probably all work out, that's not going to be tangible for you right now. So this is why I would say go straight in. Just be like, worst fears. Let's do it. Let's write it all out. What would I legit do? I actually did this exercise about 2 hours ago with my own coach around Logan. Worst fears. And when I had to actually talk about all of it, I was like, well, the first thing I would do is like bawl my eyes out. And then I would, you know, do this and that. And I was just like, of course, because that's what humans do. There was like this sense of like, oh, like I don't have like one of your first thoughts is debilitating anxiety. Debilitating anxiety is when we're catastrophizing and we're not thinking we can handle it.
Right.
Normal, I'm going to feel like shit about this is, yeah, like, I don't like having tremors and twitches. I need to figure this shit out. And if the worst case scenario happens, I will deal with that. But between now and then, no more Googling.
Yeah, no.
Dr. Google doesn't know. Dr. Google's good for a rash. If you pick out a rash and compare, you can do that.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to tell yourself, Google cannot diagnose tremors and twitches. It's not allowed to. And this is when we have to know ourselves a little bit. If you know that you go chase things down a rabbit hole, then guess what you want to do for yourself?
Don't go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, that, like, for you, Googling your health symptoms are like someone saying, you know, Corinne, I really want to lose some weight and I always binge on sugar. So here's how I'm going to do this. I'm going to keep donuts next to my desk all the time.
Yeah.
You're going to need to be like, that is an urge. I am wanting to scratch it just like somebody else wants to snack. It's a no.
I did resist it for... Oh, it's been over a year since I've had the twitches, but I did resist until they kind of seemed to be getting worse.
But I don't want you resisting.
Then I get,
I want you to listen how you're talking about it. I did resist doing it. I don't want you resisting it. I want you knowing it has no upside. There is a difference between saying, I can't do that because it takes control over me and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know what? I choose not to do that because it has no upside. If I have symptoms, they deserve a doctor's attention, not Google's attention. Google doesn't really give a shit about me. And Google has no malpractice.
I guess where my thought goes is fearful of going to a doctor because he or she's going to confirm my worst fear versus Google is still some leeway. Well, it may not be true. So that's where it kind of gets.
So I won't go confirm that I'm okay, but I will go to Google to confirm my worst suspicions.
That's
like you're saying, like, well, if I go to the doctor, they're going to tell me bad news. If I go to Google, it's not really because it's all fake. And I'm like, okay, so why do you choose to believe any of it? If you just got through telling me that Google's not accurate, why are you going to begin with? And you're like assuming you must be dying.
Yeah.
Like there's also a really good chance it's nothing.
Right.
It's called getting old. Which sucks in itself.
I want you to see that
mindset. It's like, I don't want to go to the doctor so that they confirm my suspicions. I just want to go to Google and foster them and fondle them.
Which is not helpful.
No, it still feels like shit. It's making it true in your mind, but not in fact, which is a terrible place to be.
So there's really no point in trying to figure out why I have this way of thinking, this anxiety, catastrophic thinking. It's like, why did I have this starting at age 12? It's more like, okay, I have it. Let's deal with it. I mean, is that more important?
You can go either way. The only time that I ever go back, like I've been doing a lot of work on going back to explain why I think the way I do now. Like I tend to go to, I'm all alone in things a lot. And I went back to my childhood to see where it started, to have understanding that, oh, of course I would feel that way now. So that I understand there's nothing going wrong with my brain. This is just what I do because of that learned experience. So now I need to like retrain. What most of you do is you don't work on the now to go dig around in the past for blame. I don't blame my past for feeling lonely now. I'm like, oh, of course I feel lonely now. I learned how to do it then. So now I need to unlearn it now because it's not true. It gives you like that compassionate state to be like, oh, nothing's bad happening now. Which if you can go back to your child and be like, you know, I wonder why I catastrophize stuff. Was there like, did my mom overreact when I was a kid around stuff? Like, is that where it learned? Or it's just how I figured out in my growing up that when I feel bad, something must be going wrong, really wrong. And just know that's my pattern. And I need to remind myself, like, it's just happening. And I need to decide what this means, not it's happening and it means this, which is where you're at right now. I have tremors and twitches.
Right.
I feel anxious. That means it's bad. Rather than tremors and twitches, I feel anxious. It's like, oh, I feel anxious, but what do I want the tremors and twitches to mean? It could just mean I need to call the doctor and get checked out. Or it could mean I'm going to die from ALS and suffer immensely.
Well, so
it feels a little better.
Right. I'm wondering, I saw my mom. She died. Her worst fear came true. And she died, I believe, death of Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, you know, if that's part of the reason I think the way I do.
What if it is?
Because her worst
if her worst nightmare came true, then why wouldn't mine?
Well, why wouldn't it? Answer the question.
It could.
It could? And it also what?
It couldn't. It may not come true.
Do you think your worst nightmare is the suffering death, or is your worst nightmare not living your life now, worried about having a suffering death?
I think a suffering death.
So like, it's better to suffer now just in case you have a suffering death.
Oh, no. I'm not living my life now because of that. That's I'm missing out.
Right. That is the piece you have to, like, rein yourself back in each time. And so, like, you know what? None of us are guaranteed a pleasant death, and none of us are guaranteed a miserable one. Death's just going to happen. But life is exactly what we plan. Like what I'm experiencing right now, that's in my control. Do I want to be pre-dying and suffering all along the way? Right now, what you're doing is in the fear of that, you're choosing your suffering ahead of time.
Yes.
And I guarantee you, if you ever, like, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts. The number one thing that people say on their deathbed is regretting what they didn't do with their life. It doesn't matter how much you suffer. Do not be on your deathbed regretting that you spent years and years and years fearing what was happening at that moment. You don't know what's going to happen. There's no sense in fearing it. You just know what's going to happen today. Like, you have to remind yourself, I can pre-suffer or I can live.
Right. So when I'm in that thought loop, you know, just, I have to break it. You know, I have to say something like stop, or this is not, how is this thought serving me?
Just notice you're in it. Just tell yourself, Paula, you're in one of those loop cycles. Like, a lot of times you don't have to have like a dead stop thought. You don't have to like stop that. You don't have to do any of that. Sometimes it's just like, you know what? I just notice right now I feel very panicky and anxious. Like I might suffer and die. Allowing that, what that does is it shifts you from when you're in the thought cycle, you're experiencing the cycle. It feels very real. It feels so true. When you watch the thought cycle, you get just above it and you start noticing, like, Paula, you're in a thought cycle. All that's happening, the reason why you feel this way is because of everything that you're thinking right now. It's okay. It doesn't even have to stop. Let's just notice this is what we're doing.
Okay.
It gets you out of like being in it. It's called watching.
Yes.
It's very different than experiencing.
I can do that.
Yeah. I'm going to tell all of you, the majority of you don't have to run 1,000 models and solve for the world and all this other stuff. So often it's just a matter of like, you know what? Like, I was really, really upset this morning about something. And like, so much so I had to call my, like, get on the Marco Polo with my girlfriend and cry ugly walk. You know how like you just have those moments? I was like, when you're a mom, I don't want any coaching. I just need to bitch. You know? And so I did it. And I kept repeating when I was like verbalizing it, like, and I know this is all what I'm thinking. I know it's what I'm thinking. But in that moment, I wanted to like let it out and just acknowledge it's okay. And then I'm going to tell you, I felt like I lost 5 pounds on one stupid little walk because I didn't have to make it go away. Which is, I think, when you're saying I'm resisting, it's like, I have to make this go away because the only alternative is to feel bad. It's like, no, you can just like notice it and feel bad and then be like, oh, and okay, now I feel better.
Okay.
Then when you feel better, you get to tell yourself, you know, we're not dying. We're not dying.
Well, I mean, I do logically somewhere in my brain, I'm thinking, no, if it was really ALS, it would have progressed and I would be having these other symptoms and I don't.
Right. When you're not swirling in it, you're just thinking, like when you just challenge yourself to be like, okay, you can feel bad for a minute. It's just a collection of your thoughts and stuff. But it's like, come on, girl. Do we have ALS? If we do, we'll figure it out. If we don't, what else could it be? It could be my age. It could be what I ate. It could be random. It's like me and my right shoulder all of a sudden. My right shoulder's like a piece of crap. I can't hardly bend my arm back. And I just knew that I had fucked my shoulder royally. We got bad joints. I'd done went down the rabbit hole. And I was talking to my mother who has like shoulder replacements and everything. She's like, do you sleep on your right side? I said, yes. And she said, yeah, quit sleeping on it. See if it feels better. I just knew I was never lifting again and going to have shoulder replacement surgery. We all do it. But that's called, like, you just have to listen to what you're thinking and not ignore it and not be scared of it and not think it's terrible. It's just, like, literally, if we all just get to the point where we can say, like, I am a collection of thoughts right now. That's literally all that's happened. I don't care how panicked I am and stuff. Just breathe and know it's all thoughts.
All right.
Okay. Good luck at your doctor's appointment.
Yeah, I'm here actually at Marriott. I'm coming to you for camp.
I thought it looked familiar back there.
Yeah, I know.
And when I make everybody nervous on Friday night and you're tremor and twitching, you can tell yourself, this is for sure not ALS. This is just camp magic.
I hope so. I really do.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good. Y'all are going to be shocked. For those, I know you've been to camp before, right?
Yeah, it was at the 2-day in June.
I'll just say, like, your face is so familiar. What did we coach on then?
That I'm not smart enough. Yeah, I know, right? I've come a long ways. I really have. But
you know what you you're smart enough to know that your brain lies.
Yes.
You need to be like,
it's really good at it.
This is what I wrote down for my coaching session today. She said, if it doesn't feel good, it was never true. Can you imagine if you just went through your life and everything that doesn't feel good, like if the thought doesn't feel good, it's like, it was never true. I don't care how many times I told myself that's not true. It was just learned. Smartest thing she told me today. I like literally, you know how you guys say, I have to write that down. I literally stopped her and I said, in case you don't remember what you just said, I have to write this down.
If it doesn't feel good, it was never true.
It was never true. It was just learned. Like every time you have anxiety around your health condition, just, it doesn't feel good. It can't mean it's true. It was just something that I've learned, something I've experienced, something I'm thinking right now. There's no way it could be true.
Okay.
It challenges you to let go of stuff you tell yourself, whether you want to keep it or not. Like you get to keep any thought you want. But always be willing to challenge what you're believing in the moment, especially when it doesn't feel good.
Okay.
Okay, lady.
I'm going to do that.
I'll see you. I'm coming. After this call, I'm headed over to the Marriott. I have the 4 o'clock Queens Club, and then I have a meeting tonight, meeting tomorrow, but I'll be walking around.
I need to join Queens Club. I have dropped 31 pounds. Thank you very much.
You should. We have extra calls.
Oh, cool.
Y'all need more calls.
Yeah, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
It was a good call. Okay, let's see who's next. Ann, you here? Ann D? Becca, I'm going to go ahead and call on you since you got your hand raised. Hey, Becca. Let me get you all set up.
Hello.
Hey.
How are you? There we are. Good. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm a little nervous, but okay.
That's all right. I've already had lunch, so I'm not even hungry. I'm not going to bite anybody today. All right. What are we coaching on?
Well, so I'm a September baby. I was a groupie for 2 or 3 weeks before I became a September baby and was doing well, was in that stage one high. And then last week, I kind of sent out the SOS to you because I made food plans every single day and ignored them every single day. I could give you a host of reasons and excuses. I think a little bit was the high was gone. The hard work was kind of setting in a little bit.
So your mind shifted.
Yeah, I would say.
I want you to really catch the difference between, like, you know, it's like it, like the good stuff just disappeared. Where did it go?
Right. Life caught up just a little bit. Yeah.
And no, my life didn't catch up. Your mindset around what you were doing shifted. Okay. You thought different things.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah,
I can see that. That's how our model works. So that's what we're learning this week. So for all my old school people, the whiteboard's back, y'all. I went whiteboard free for a while, but we're going to keep it now. All right. So here's how the model works.
Okay.
So we had, what, 7 plans we didn't follow?
Correct.
Okay. So we can work this one of 2 ways. We can work about how you think about that now or why you didn't follow plans. So 7 unfollowed plans.
Right.
Is down here on the action line.
Got it.
Right now what is going on is when it's up here, you're thinking something's gone wrong. Mm-hmm. Like all my good mojo left me.
Right. Yeah. I've been doing a lot of plans. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Tell me why you didn't do the plans.
I think, so my thoughts about it now, after I've done some more of the thought downloads and have moved into module 4, I think that I was a bit rebellious. I have lupus, and with that, I don't want to get emotional about this. I have a lot of food restrictions anyway. And so I think that my food plans are very restrictive and that I rebelled against them. And some of the old thinking of, you know, I was an athlete, I can manage this on my own, you know, so just old thought patterns started to rationalize that if I got close enough, that my food restrictions that I have to follow anyway are enough. And so I just kind of, I bailed. I, instead of staying on plan, I ate when I wanted to eat because I used to could do that.
Could you ever just use this whenever you wanted to eat?
There were moments in life when I was training a lot. You know, I mean, I was always an amateur athlete, nothing exciting. But if I were very disciplined, I could, you know, do the Monday through Friday really strict eating and then have gloriously huge days. And they created some really bad habits. And I think it also...
Yeah, so you never really... So here's the question to tell yourself. I never really could eat what I wanted because all that proved to me was that I was never in control of food.
True.
It just taught me poor eating habits.
Mm-hmm.
You're making me like, well, you know, like I was like an amateur athlete and I could keep my weight down when I ate like an asshole to myself. Like you're defending, like, they'd be like saying to my, well, I have a great marriage. I never told my wife I was cheating on her for 20 years.
True.
It was okay. It was okay until the day she found out. Like you're saying, like, it was okay until the day I started gaining weight.
That's very true. And so much of my, so much of my illnesses seem to stem from the way I fed my body for so many years.
So romanticizing that eating like an asshole back in the day, like, well, this is why this feels terrible, because back then it was so good. It's like, no, back then never good. Because all it's like, here's your thought. So you have food plans.
Mm-hmm.
This is your daily plan. Here's your thought about it. They are very restrictive and I have to follow them.
Right.
Yeah. How does that feel?
Like I'm setting myself up for failure. it feels defeating from the start. Yeah. It feels, I think I felt controlled by it too much instead of empowered really by it.
You felt controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean in control.
No.
Okay.
Right.
So then we have 7 unfollowed plans.
Right.
And guess what this results in?
A lot of self-doubt for me that I can get past this point in the dieting plan. For me, this is where I'll lose my 10, 15 pounds and then bail.
I restrict from good health and goals.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's resonating a lot.
Yeah. You don't have to follow anything. You've already proven you don't have to follow them. No one's making you do anything.
Right.
Not even restrictive.
No. Right, I can eat whatever I want according to the plans. I know.
If you decide to get pissed, guess what? You get to just eat whatever you want. It's never a have to.
Okay.
So that's what you've got to figure out with your plans. Guys, all of you, I don't care what you put on your food plan. If you go chicken and broccoli 24/7 for a year, it's not restrictive in a bad way. It's called a choice.
Okay.
Every single time.
Right.
Why do you plan your food the way you do, though? Why are you being such a martyr and victim to eating to feel good?
It's a good question. I think in some regards, it makes me feel disciplined. It kind of... that there's a satisfaction in accomplishment. And I have so many of those words of yours and in my brain trying to find the right ones, but it feels like that, okay, well, because of the lupus, there's a lot of no's. And so I stay away from the no's, but I still haven't lost any weight. And so because even living with a pretty healthy, even living with a diet a disease that makes me have a healthy diet, I still haven't lost any weight. And so I'm notching it up, taking it up a notch.
I want you to hear this. A disease that makes me have a healthy diet. You are still.
I know.
There's things outside of you that make you do things. You're proving it wrong consistently that nothing makes you do anything. If all it took was a good disease for all of us to be healthy, then everybody in the tribe who has a disease would be healthy.
Right.
The only thing that makes us do healthy things, we're going to do this on this model.
Okay.
Okay. So we got our food plans. And on the action line, it's going to be follow healthy plans. The only thing that's ever going to make you do that is by you thinking and feeling something that motivates you to follow them. Thinking that they're restrictive, that they control you, that they're unfair, that it's a big list of no's for me.
Yeah.
Your food list is like, I want you to think about your food list. It's not a list of no's. It's a list of yeses that allow you to feel better.
Okay.
Like, this is literally a perspective shift, but you're going to have to tell yourself this a lot. You're very conditioned to your old story around it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what version of lupus do you have? My mom's got lupus.
I have systemic. I've been in remission for 6 years because of changes to my diet. So there's reason to celebrate. I am healthy because a healthy diet. I'm healthier than I could be, or whatever the proper way to say it is. What you're saying is resonating. It's if I am thinking about these healthy plans as a path to health or to maintained health or improved health, then it does start to change my perspective.
So why do you want to eat some junk like you're not supposed to eat? In those moments, why do you want it? Like, why is it like, oh, you know what? Screw my health. Like right now, I really need to eat this. It's so much better.
Yeah. That is a good question because the moment I do, I turn into a terror. Usually it impacts my emotions as much as it does my physical being. I do think it's rebellion. It's like, screw lupus. I can do this. Sorry.
No, you're fine. This is what you need to be uncovering. You've decided the way to take retribution on lupus is to eat your face off.
Yeah.
And feel worse, which just makes lupus have more power in your life.
It does. You're right.
I'm going to encourage you to do some thought downloads on your relationship with your lupus.
Okay.
I think that at the core of all this, I think we really understand that when it comes to your food plans, you're going to need to think about them differently. I mean, that's like the simple cure to get you back to eating on plan.
Right.
In the short term. But if you don't heal your relationship with your lupus, and not like, I'm getting a sense, and this is just because I got to go to the next person, but here's what I'm sensing from you, that you feel like it's a bad thing, that it's taking away things from you. Like you are describing it in a way that's just not helping you live the life you want. The only way you get to live the life you have to just be like, you know what? I have lupus and I want to live the life I want. Lupus can't stop that.
Okay.
You just have to define what life you want. And sometimes it's like, it's kind of like with Logan and his autism. I know on an intellectual level, there are certain things that cannot happen for him.
Right.
But indulging and thinking about it doesn't help me, doesn't help him. But thinking like, you know what? I'm not ignoring that part, but I'm just like, prove to me how thinking about that ever helps. If it helped, it'd be one thing. But what I like to be like, of course, sometimes I'm going to worry about this, but it's not helpful.
Okay.
And so redefining your relationship with lupus, like I would do one thought download on all your thoughts about it now.
Okay.
And then I would do another thought download on, if I could tell myself any story, and you don't even have to believe it today, like if I could just tell it any way I wanted that I knew would motivate me, that would change my life, I would tell it this way. That's the anchor story to start reading on a regular basis, to when you want to think these things, to realize like my old story is a collection of the things that I have just practiced, but they're not true anymore.
Okay.
It is a shift in your identity as someone with lupus.
Okay.
It takes time. So don't expect this. Yeah. Like, well, Corinne, you know, like it's 3 days later and I'm on a coaching call. I don't know why that didn't work.
True. Yeah. I anticipate this taking another, I don't know, a good long while, but thank you.
You know what? It's going to take as long as it takes, but I'm already lowering the temperature on it. So it doesn't matter.
Right. That's true. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
I want to show everybody this model. So like one of the things when it comes to food plans is this is my choice, or I created this. No one's making me. Very often, guys, just redefining your relationship with your food plans. So if it's nobody makes me, a lot of you need to start here. Nobody makes me. I choose. What this does is it removes you from being a victim to food plans, victim to dieting, victim to your weight loss and all the things too. This is just stuff I'm choosing to eat or not eat. If I think it's good enough or not good enough, it's all because of what I'm thinking. It puts all the ownership on you. Guys, I'm going to tell you, the more ownership you take, the faster your weight loss comes. The more you fight taking ownership, the slower you're going to go. So when nobody makes me, I choose. Some of you will feel in control. Some of you will feel more relaxed. Some of you will feel very aware. Sometimes it just focuses you. Sometimes there's like an alertness that happens. So all of those are feelings. So let's just put focused here. So we go from focused from nobody makes me, I choose to, you know, I have to eat this, which feels very forced. Now we're going to feel very focused instead. So we follow our plans. If we're not even, and I will just tell you, sometimes the action is like followed healthy plans. For some of you, when you go to nobody makes me, I choose, your action will be to eat with awareness. So even if you're going to break your plan, the change comes for some of you. It's like, you know what? I'm totally fixing to break my plan. No one's making me. I know I'm choosing this. If I'm going to overeat, it's no longer ever going to be because I have a sob story around food. Right now, I'm just choosing to eat. That makes you eat with awareness. And so as you're eating, it's not as fun. You're very conscious of what you're doing. And for some of you, that's the next step for you, to go from unconscious fuck it eating to very conscious aware eating. So when you have nobody makes me, I choose with your food plans and you feel focused, you follow the healthy plans, you eat awareness, guess what your result line comes? I take control. So I control food. This is a key model for a lot of you. I control food. The more you get to where you're controlling everything that you eat, then you know if you're the one in control, you're the one who's deciding, you might, when you anchor to a goal, start making different choices. I would much rather, I mean, I love having goal weight numbers, guys, but so many of you are like, every result's going lose weight, lose weight, lose weight, lose weight. Sometimes in order to lose weight, it's like with me and my ice cream, I had to learn how to control ice cream. I had to learn how to have a, like where I knew I was choosing relationship with ice cream to eventually be able to lose weight. That was a key stepping stone. So if you think about like weight loss, guys, let me just show you this too. I need a bigger eraser. Anybody want to gift me one for Christmas? Just send me a nice big eraser. Weight loss often happens like this. For some of us, the first few stages are going to be things like eat on plan before it generates weight loss. Like the first few steps are, you know, stop at 3 when I used to stop at 4. Like catch self in a fog eat. Those are like the weekend, I only have one shit show day. Like there are so many little steps that happen where it just doesn't seem like a lot's happening, but as long as you keep going, eventually what happens is eating on plan becomes eating a healthier plan. Because you were leveling up all along. You got good at being consistent. Stopping at a 3, eventually one day you're like, you know what? I think I'm going to see, like, maybe this will be a 2. Let's just see what happens the more you experiment. Catching yourself in a foggy eventually starts being, like, you don't even do the fog. You notice you just want to foggy. And then you're stopping yourself. When those things start happening, look, we start taking off. The only thing that keeps you guys in stage 2 is your belief that in stage two, it's not working. Stage two is the phase that the stage that's working really well. It's just the stage where you choose to think it's not. And that's why it feels like the ass. Anne, are you here? Bryn, I'm going to call on you next. I'm going to guess Anne's not here. We want it, Meg, we want to take ownership of our thoughts. Our C line is just outside of us. Well, where'd you go? Bryn, I didn't get you, wherever, whatever happened to you. Let's see. Kate, I'm going to call on you next. Kate Green. Oh, Bryn, I'll call on you next. I must have like lowered you for some reason. All right, lady, what are we coaching on?
Hi. We are coaching on snacking today, the snack. You've actually had quite a bit of this in previous phone calls, and in your Q&A today, you had some enlightening things to say for me.
All right. What'd you learn?
What was the phrase that I wrote down? I can stop anytime I'm ready. Am I ready right now? That's what I wrote down. That was a big one for me for the snacking is it seems to be in the hours that I'm focused on right now is that 3:30 to 5 period where I pick up the kids from school. It's a transition period. I've managed to get rid of the snacking at night after dinner. So this is my next sort of hurdle, if you will.
What if it's not a hurdle?
Then it's not a hurdle. It's just something I have to figure out.
Let me ask you, like, thinking about this 3 to 5, it's a hurdle. It's my next hurdle.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't feel great.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to take you longer to get there if every day you're kind of setting yourself up to do hurdles?
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
What if you're just going to be choosing to either eat your snack or not?
Right. For me, it's the, I will eat my plant snack, but then I'm getting the kids snacks. And so I'm eating here and there and just eating things off plan. And that's what I don't want to be doing anymore. And so, as you said in the last model you did, you know, I'm in control of my food.
How old are these kids?
7 and 5.
Can you not just let them make them up their own?
The 7-year-old probably could, the 5-year-old still. She could like grab a bag of chips or something or some carrots if I had them out for her. I would need to change the routine, which could completely be done. And I never thought about that.
You know why I thought of it?
Why is that?
I didn't think it was a hurdle.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Honestly, it was just a gut reaction question. I was like, well, this is easy to solve. Can't the kids just do this? Like, but that came from a mindset of, this is going to be easy to solve.
Right.
Not, this is going to be my hurdle. It's my next hurdle. I think a lot of you, what happens when it comes to food is you have to watch how you're describing what it's going to take to make changes.
Sure.
This is not just you. This is everyone. Like when I have people, like when people tell me I'm not journaling, I'm not making a 24-hour plan. I'm not following my 24-hour plans. All I usually will ask is like, why?
Yeah.
Like, it's a simple question. It's like, well, you know, it's really going to be hard. You know, I just for years. It's like, well, no wonder you're not doing it.
Yeah.
Because you've like framed it that it's going to like, I don't know, require master level surgery. And it's like, I'm just going to every single day decide whether or not I'm going to like, nosh on my kids' snacks, or I'm not going to do that anymore.
Right. And what's interesting is since I sent this email, I, of course, have been way more conscious of it and have been stopping myself and not wanting them. And it's the same thing. I just sort of decided that for the after dinner snacks, like I just wasn't doing that anymore. I just, when I was done with dinner, that was it. And I could, for some reason, get my brain wrapped around that in the after dinner frame, but
couldn't. Why was the after dinner easy? Was it easy, or were there, like, the first few times it was like, wow, I really want to eat?
Discomfort for quite a while. I'm an April baby, so I've been at it a little bit longer, but I'd say I really fully committed mid-August. So I was doing plans, but I wasn't tracking, blah, 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 blah. So, but the after dinner thing, I probably stopped doing June-ish. So, and I just, I sat in a lot of discomfort, and I talked to my accountability group, my Marco Polo, quite a bit in the evenings. And then just one day, it just kind of wasn't really hard anymore to say no. And occasionally, I think like once in the past month, I ate after dinner, but it was because we had an early dinner and I was legit hungry. So
I just want everybody to hear this. She decided to not eat at night. She didn't eat at night and traded in to just be like, okay, I'm going to talk to my Marco Polo group. I'm just going to talk about what's going on in my head. Like, you probably talked about it not being all that easy and acknowledging, like, I'd really like to eat. Like, that's called leaning into it and just being like, I'm going to acknowledge, of course I want to eat. I've been eating every night now for, 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than being like, I can't eat. There's no way I'll ever lose weight if I keep eating. Like when you admonish and create a huge cinematic production around not having food at 8 p.m., it's going to feel like a dramatic movie.
Yeah.
When you just talk to people and they're like, God, like, y'all, I'm just telling you, I'd really like to eat right now. I said I wouldn't. I'm reaching out to you guys. I'm doing the things I said I would do. This isn't easy. Eventually what happens is when you stop doing the eating and you start doing all of that, then your brain quits sending up the signal. It's very lazy. That's when you're like, and it just kind of got easy. It's like, yeah, it got easy because your brain decided, well, if she's not going to eat, we don't need to think that anymore.
Absolutely.
What do you think is going to happen in the afternoons?
Well, eventually I'm going to get there, but I have to figure out the tools that are going to get me in the same. Like, as I said, I was able to Marco Polo with my group or talk to my husband about the fact that, I'm not snacking after dinner anymore. You can have whatever you want. He eats his bowls of cereal and blah, 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 blah. But I'm not.
You just told your kids, hey, mommy's got a new plan. You're going to watch mommy eat this snack every day with you, and you're going to have this snack. And if mommy wants to eat your food, you get to say, all mine. Not for you, mama.
That's a great plan.
You made your plan.
They would absolutely help me in that. So.
You have two built-in accountability partners that will for sure enjoy every minute of it.
Of course, because they love to be. That would give them a little bit of control, and they would like that.
Yeah. And it would help you. It would also set an amazing example for your kids. Like, look at what I'm eating, and I'm going to eat with you guys now.
Yeah.
And just tell me, if I want to eat your food, it would just be like the cat. Like, do you have a cat or a dog?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It'd be like saying, like, what do we tell the dog when he jumps on the table and wants to eat off our plate?
Get down.
Get down. No. This isn't like your bowl's over there. Same thing with the kids. Like, no. Your food's right there.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Very helpful things. I appreciate it.
All righty, lady. Good luck.
Thanks. Bye.
That was a fun one. Enjoyed that call. We didn't even get to model. I don't think we had to, though. That's good. Okay, Bryn, I think I cut you off last time. Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. I am. This is my first time doing a Zoom, so it's like, oh, what happened?
I think I actually demoted you by accident. I was trying to ask you to start your video. I do this about once every call, so.
All right, I'm a April baby, but I really identify as a September baby because I kind of recommitted with this group of people going through the program.
Good.
And I'm leaving for a 9-day cruise tomorrow.
9 days? You're so lucky.
I know.
Jesus.
I know. It's going to be, well, we're doing 2 days in Orlando and then 7 days on the ship. So
still,
I know,
amazing.
I know. It's going to be amazing and fun. And I, in the past, have done like all of the diets, like keto, the last big one was keto, and I lost like 40 pounds. And then I went away for a week and was not keto. And then it was like, forget it. I'm done. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to figure out how to approach the trip to be able to still enjoy food and drinks that I want to taste and try and experience.
You had to guess. How would you do that?
Well, I'm kind of trying to been working on a protocol for the trip. And so right now it kind of looks like a good, better, best choice for breakfast and lunch.
Okay. So let's do this. Let's actually model this. This will be great. Okay. This is a good model. Okay. So we have a 9-day trip.
Yes.
I would put amazing in there, but then I would get called out by every coach saying no adjectives in the C line. And our result is what? What do we want from this result?
I want to end
when you come back.
I want to come back and feel ready to step right in, like I didn't just blow it all week.
Okay.
Like, but I want to come back feeling like I was in control.
Tell me what you don't want to have happened.
Okay.
When you come back, like if you could come back at the end of 9 days, the first thing you would tell me would be what?
That I was in control.
So that's what I was eating from the trip.
Yeah.
You want to be in control?
Well, I mean, I want to have a great trip, but I don't want to then beat myself up if I overeat. Or
you don't have to, like, well, we can solve that real quick. Beating myself up, you said, I don't want to have to beat myself up.
Right. Yeah.
Guess what? No matter what you do on the trip, I don't care if you're face down. Like, let's say they decide to make a pool full of ding-dongs and you just jump in and eat your way out every day. Guess what you could do when you get home?
Just accept it and move on?
Yeah, you could just be like, well, that was a fun trip. Time to get back to my 24-hour plan. I mean, you get to think about it any way you want. Guys,
right.
I want you to, like, all of you need to hear this for all of us with the self-talk doo-doo central. I don't want to have to beat myself up as if that's just a given. You have to start teaching yourself now that anytime you're beating yourself up, it's because you're deciding to allow yourself to do it, not because it just happens to you.
Right. Okay.
So I'm going to suggest the result be when you get back from the 9-day trip, the result is I'm ready to keep on going.
Be perfect.
Because that's kind of what you presented with, is that you typically go on trips and then you just can't get back on program.
Yes, exactly.
Probably has something to do with that have to beat shit up mess, but you know, we solved that already.
Right.
So we're ready to keep going. Y'all will learn real quick that my whiteboarding skills are not good. People will watch the video and be like, the fuck does that even say? All right. So we're going to work the model backward. This is the model that we're going to want. What do you need to do on the trip in order to feel like you're ready to keep going?
That's where I'm kind of getting stuck.
It's just
I feel like I need to enjoy myself, but still watch my hunger scale.
So pay attention to the hunger scale.
Yeah. That's what I've been, as I'm looking at, like, I just did like my habits for where I started in September. And that's the most lacking of my habit tracker. So pay attention to hunger scale is probably a big one. And then I'd like to also, be able to taste foods, but not feel, well, I guess so that's hunger school. Be able to taste things and not feel like I'm just diving like right in.
So like you're going to need to practice tasting and stopping.
Yes.
Okay. This is great.
Such a concept.
I know, but here's the thing. Like I said, practice it, which doesn't mean you're going to just go on your trip and then every time you taste something, you automatically stop. Sometimes what will happen is you'll taste it. You'll catch yourself overeating. Guess what? You need to practice stopping. The tasting just kept going until you decided to stop.
Right. And I've been trying to work on that at home too with my meals, like trying to be like, because I know I'm practicing my hunger skills. I don't really have it 100% dialed in yet. So I'd be like, okay, I'm going to just try and leave a couple bites and see where that puts me, because I'm not quite sure where I'm at yet. So that's been helping, but that's the knowing I can choose to stop is the, like,
not on your action line, being open to it not being all about the food.
Yeah.
So, like, when you were on the trip, this is what happens to a lot of us when we are, when we obsess about weight loss and we fear we're not going to get back on plan, like all this stuff. We will spend the first part of the trip hyper-focused on doing it right, making sure that our weight loss will continue. And then we are like, what we, because you said what you ultimately want from this trip is to enjoy yourself, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, the only way to,
I don't want to be just like, sorry,
to not obsess about the food the whole time.
Right.
The best way to enjoy yourself is to catch yourself enjoying the trip when you're not eating, so that you start tying enjoyment to more than just the food.
Right.
What you're probably going to end up watching yourself do is eat thinking, I just want to enjoy myself, when what you're actually doing is shutting off all the thoughts that you're using against yourself. You're not enjoying. You're numbing.
Like the thoughts of like, okay, is this, would I put this on my plan at home? Should I be doing this? What is that? Like, that's what I don't want to be like sitting there like anxious about dinner in 2 hours, or, you know, I've already been trying to like Google what they have at the restaurants and things like that.
All that's fine, but you're doing it from a place of fear.
Right.
Rather than just being like, you know what? I just want to feel prepared. I just want to know what, like, what's on this ship. I want to watch myself enjoy things other than food. I want to see how, like, if I was you, I'd wake up every morning and I would write first about everything that you enjoyed from the day before that had nothing to do with food.
Okay.
Prove to yourself you're enjoying this trip. And then when you have the food, keep it simple. So, like, my only job, I said I would like to taste some things and I would like to learn how to stop, so I don't have to overthink anything.
Right.
I wanted to pay attention to my hunger scale. I'm just going to ask, am I hungry before we actually start eating? If I'm not hungry, I give myself the option to say yes or no, we're eating.
Right.
Like, that's how you start. Like if you're going to come back ready to keep going, you just need to, while you're there, you don't need to be perfect. And you don't need to eat like a queen. You need to go there doing the habits that you're just going to keep doing when you get home.
Okay.
So to enjoy this trip, what thought are you going to need to have? Like, in order to pay attention to your hunger scale, be open to there being more things to enjoy than just the food.
I think I'm going to have the thought that I should be enjoying time with my family and watching my kids laugh, and that it's not just about the food.
That's fine. I just want to make sure that, but I just want you to think about this. When you're on the trip, is that an easy thought for you to access? This is about watching my kids and having their enjoyment, and it's not about the food and blah, blah, blah. Like, I just wanted, like, we just need something easy that you can, like, tell yourself super fast that will be like, you know what? I'm going to enjoy this trip. And here's why.
Because it's an experience that, like, I should be able to enjoy. I don't know, like, we've been waiting for this trip for, like, 2 years, so.
This is my dream.
I'm here. Yeah.
To make it the dream come true.
Right.
Your dream come true isn't eating your face off and going home and feeling bad about yourself.
Yeah.
Your dream come true isn't also eating your face off while you're there to avoid feeling bad about yourself.
Okay. I'm going to have to replay this and copy the...
I would replay it, and I would just, like, if it was me, I would, every time before it was time to eat, just say, this is an opportunity for me to really love food and myself at the same time.
That's like the dream goal, right?
Yeah, and the only way to get the dream goal is to start doing it now, even when you believe it's not going to happen. It's like, and let me tell you, part of loving yourself and food at the same time means that if you start tasting something and you catch yourself wanting to just keep eating, and it's like 30 bites in, loving yourself means I don't beat myself up. You know what? I'm going to stop tasting right now. You make it simple.
Okay.
The harder you make it, the harder it becomes. The easier you make it, the easier it becomes.
Okay. Good.
So what are we
got lots of thought.
This is when I love myself and food.
This is when I love myself and food.
I mean, do you like that or no?
I do. I like that. Yeah. Because I don't want to be like on like the whole journey, like big picture. Like I love food. Like I like trying new things. I like experimenting. I like doing all that stuff. And I don't want to just be like, oh, sorry, I can't eat that. It has carbs in it today. Or, you know, I want to be able to do both and have some sense of like I'm not just out of control around it.
Let me ask you this. Wouldn't it be amazing if you could just love food and eat it responsibly?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Right. Yeah,
that just takes practice.
Okay.
Take it from someone
that is like
overeat all the time.
It just even like practice. Beyond. Yeah. Even like beyond the number, like that is like the big goal for me. Right. That's a way bigger goal than the number on the scale.
Well, if you really enjoy food, like when you talk to foodies, people who are like true diehard foodies who also have like, you know, like a healthy weight, they don't sit there and be like, well, you know, I'm going to have to stop tasting in a tube and I'm going to have to do blah, blah, blah. They don't. They like really enjoy the experience. And part of enjoying the experience is not being miserable afterward.
Right.
Like when we're truly, guys, I want all of you to hear this. When you are truly enjoying food, you don't eat it and then have to suffer the back end consequence of not liking yourself. That's eating to postpone beating yourself up.
Right.
That is a serious water jug. Oh my God. Like you mean business.
It's 64 ounces exactly.
I was going to say, like, it looks like a gallon practically.
It is, but I like my water to be like super cold so I can pack it like all day and then just keep it with me. And if I finish it, I made 64 ounces.
There you go. Yeah. I think you're going to do fine.
Okay.
I just want your brain to go to work on like, I can love meat and food at the same time.
That's perfect.
All right. Have fun.
All right. Thank you.
Yourself. All right.
Thank you. Have fun at camp this weekend.
Oh, we will. All my clothes are packed. I'm so excited. I'm just like, ah!
That's what I'm doing next is packing for 10 days, which is a project.
That's a lot of clothes. I can't even imagine myself. I'm only bringing 3 suitcases and a clothes basket for 5.
You know, I come from like a line of overpackers. So we say like my whole family is an overpacker of clothes. So I think we have to rent 2 cars to get us all there. Just to sit luggage.
Y'all are going to have such a good time. Cruises are also a really good opportunity to be able to eat healthy. You know,
yeah, there's lots of
so much fresh seafood and all the things. It's like, you know,
you get to
like really enjoy food there, you know, which is, you know.
Yeah, it's not just like crap food.
Right. It's not like Golden Corral.
Right. Okay. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. I think that's everybody. We didn't have Ann, so I think Ann didn't get here. Okay. All right, guys. Y'all have a good one. I will see you. I'll see you tomorrow morning for Q&A on the Facebook. Please keep really good thoughts in your head for all of our campers. You know, I know I'll show up, but y'all don't have to worry about me, but not that y'all have to worry at all. Right. But I do want you to think about our campers. they come and they're nervous. I've been reading in our private Facebook group with them. I watch what you guys talk about. They worry, they get nervous, they have all the feels, all the fears, all the things. So just give them some good juju from across the way that they're going to come and they're going to allow themselves to feel all of it, but also be open to just hearing what they need to hear. I think that's always the most important thing for our girls that come to our events. And guys, if you are looking for information on the 6-day, it's really the 6-month training with me where we do 6 days in person. You can go over to pnptribe.com and go to live events. We now have almost 30 ladies signed up. We're getting a good group. So we start officially November 1st. So November 1st, they start getting a packet in the mail from me with things to do. There's pre-work. There's some stuff we're going to do to make sure that when we hit the 6-day in person in January, that we're prepared and ready to go. And then for 4 months, they're going to continue their work with me so that we can keep the momentum going. That program also is the only one that has a payment plan. So if you're interested at all, go on over there. Then all the other events are there. April camp is getting close to selling out. We are now down to, I think, 65 spots left only. So the out of 350. And then Kathy still has plenty of openings in hers, the 3-day transformation where you're going to work on like one problem. And you'll hear a lot of coaching and stuff, but it's really where we kind of dial into, you want to really focus in on this one thing you would like to get past. And then we also have Don't Stop Believing, which is going to be good too. And I think it's half sold out now. I think it's over half sold out. Okay, that's it. All right, I will see y'all tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Central Time, Facebook Live, in our private group. Bye, y'all.